This is the fourth of four in a series of meditations that are collectively called eyewitnesses. The people, those who watched, or in some sense watched over, Jesus' last weeks and days, and finally his crucifixion. Nicodemus, the ruler of the Jews, the leader of the opposition party, came to find out what Jesus was about, and they oddly found some common ground. Barabbas was literally the first one whose life was saved because Jesus died. And Simon of Cyrene, the one who bore Jesus' cross, all of whom somewhat obscure characters in the drama that unfolds leading us to Easter. The last of the eyewitnesses is quite the opposite, by far the most dramatic of the eyewitnesses. The Gospels record that Jesus says seven things from the cross, the seven last words or the seven phrases. Interestingly, it takes all four Gospels for these to be recorded. And with one interesting exception, all of them are only in one of the Gospels. It's in John's Gospel, the fourth Gospel that was written, where Jesus says, "I thirst," where he gives that sort of uncommonly human reflection. It's also where he points to the beloved disciple and to his mother and sort of asks that the beloved disciple do for his mother what he can no longer do and take care of her. And at the very end, Jesus' last words in John's Gospel are a simple declaration, "It is finished." So also, only in Luke's Gospel does he have a conversation with the other thief on the cross, which he gives the famous promise, "Today you will be with me in paradise." And you know, it's something that we hope we hear one day also. So those four, directed essentially to other people, are accompanied by three more things that he says, all three of which are directed explicitly to God the Father, which makes God the Father himself a very profound and deeply interested eyewitness, God the Father. Now, what's interesting about this is one of the three things he directs to God his Father is recorded twice. It's recorded verbatim in both Mark's Gospel and in Matthew's Gospel. And those are the first two that are written. Now, we have a lot of what has become the New Testament that we wonder whether it actually happened in just this way or whether the authors put it in to make a point or reveal a larger truth. If Jesus said anything from the cross, because this one was recorded in both the earliest and the next of the versions of his story, this would be the most likely of the things that he would have said for sure. And it's a fascinating statement. It is a lament. It is a cry. It is a statement of utter despair and abandonment. My God, why have you forsaken me? Jesus dies, utterly alone, forsaken, abandoned, and in despair. And that's all he says in those two versions of the story, directed, hurled at, maybe in an accusatory way, at God the Father who observes. But a lot of people say to me over the years in the midst of turmoil, "I am so angry. I am so angry at God. And I can hardly cope with the idea that I'm angry at God. I feel guilty about that." And my response has been in one form or another, "Well, you're in good company. Read the story of Jesus on the cross. He was furious, totally despaired and abandoned." And it's an interesting illustration of this notion of the incarnation. If God decided to be one with us, he certainly allowed his one and only Son to experience all of human emotions, most focused and most directly on the most painful, the last moment of his life. So if you feel like hurling angry retorts at God, you're in good company. God himself, through his Son, both knows how it feels, and he continues to be an eyewitness to what you're going through. My God, why have you forsaken me? The only thing he says in Mark and Matthew. In Luke, Jesus on the cross is portrayed much differently. He speaks to the other thief on the cross, and he says one other thing to God, his Father. The soldiers and others are railing at him and mocking him and making an unimaginably difficult situation just fractionally worse. To which Jesus says to God, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." A much more controlled and aware Jesus prays to God the Father to forgive those who are tormenting him. I've often heard in my own mind, "Father, forgive them, they know darn well what they're doing, and I'm not happy about it," you know? But it's an interesting, and I had not thought about this angle on that saying until this week. I have over the years heard many people say to me, "Will you stop preaching about forgiveness so darn much? I can't do it." Especially with that one. "I know we're supposed to forgive and forget. I can't forget, and I'm not especially good at forgiving." And I'm going, just this week, here's the way out of that. Pray that God will forgive them, then you don't have to. "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they do. They're full." It doesn't matter. Offer a prayer that God will forgive them. And it doesn't mean that you'll suddenly be best friends or change anything in particular, except perhaps one thing. If you are able to pray to God to forgive someone who's done, from your point of view, an unforgivable thing, it may prevent you from seeking to get even. And if you don't try to get even, things might get better, at least in your own heart. The way out of being unable to forgive is to pray that God will forgive them. And it becomes less likely that you'll try to do them harm as a result. And God is watching and understanding and entering into that dilemma. "Why have you forsaken me? Father, forgive them." And the last thing Jesus says from the cross, again, only in Luke's gospel, sort of an elaboration of what he says in John, "It is finished." He says, at the very last, "Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit." Again, fully aware, largely in control of at least his own emotions, and vastly different than his last moments as Matthew and Mark record them. "Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit." When I was a kid, I had this superstition that if I knew exactly when I was going to die or just about to die, this is what I would say: "Into thy hands I commend my spirit," so that if I died the next second, I would go to heaven. You see, now that's the mindset of a child, right? Although it was also the mindset of the Emperor Constantine, who decreed that he not be baptized until he was on his deathbed, so that perhaps he'd have no time to screw it up. Well, it's a fascinating notion, however, that the same Jesus who feels utterly alone and abandoned on the other end of the spectrum is in effect saying to God, his Father, who is the eyewitness to all of these events, "I'm coming home. Take me home. Into your hands I commend my spirit." He has a notion of, even though God, his Father, has done this unto him, home is where they have to take you in. That's a sentiment from Robert Frost. Home is where, when you go there, they have to take you in. And we know that there are people in our lives who do, in fact, love us beyond what we deserve, with whom we are sometimes estranged or even despair, have a difficult time forgiving, and yet they are the ones we hold dear in our hearts, and who at the end of the day hold our spirits safe. Jesus experiences the full range of human emotion, not just to his death, but at the moment of his death. And at the very last, as Luke reports it, "I'm ready to come home. Let's be done with all this drama. Let's be done with all this horror. Let's go home." I wonder sometimes if God doesn't watch over us in the going out and coming in, as though we're part of a science experiment. You know, it's an interesting question why doesn't God intervene? I mean, people told Jesus on the cross, if you're God, tell God to send his angels to get you out of this mess. God doesn't get us out of this mess for inexplicable reasons. But he watches over and understands. Because if he got us out of this mess, it would cost him, I think, the most powerful gift he's given us, and that is free will. We are allowed by God to choose how we act and interact. What we're given are examples and stories and role models and unconditional love, the full range of experience and empathy to enable us to choose, at least from time to time, in ways that make it somewhat better. I think if we look at all of the eyewitnesses, if we look at all of the things Jesus says from the cross, and maybe look at the way it's portrayed most recently through Luke's version, I'm coming home. It's a choice to continue to love. As God watches over our going out and our coming in, God continues to draw us toward home with his love. Amen.